On the first day of July, 1924, as the sun neared the end of its long span over the New Mexico desert, the Indians of Taos Pueblo awaited an important visitor. Most, like their war chief, Antonio Romero, hoped the man would become their ally. The Pueblos were in desperate need of allies. Some of their best irrigated lands, occupied by Anglos and Mexican Americans, were on the verge of being lost forever without compensation. Their traditional religion was under attack by Christian fundamentalist missionaries and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Federal marshals could appear at any moment to end their defiance of the BIA's ban on their pagan ceremonies. Their children were undernourished and sick, some dying of tuberculosis, others blinded by trachoma. Now the Pueblo way of life was threatened with extinction. The Pueblos needed friends in the powerful white world, and this man was very powerful. As dusk neared, Indians on the roofs of their adobe homes noticed three twisting billows approaching from the distance. When they could see that these billows were unusually large automobiles, the Pueblo exploded with excitement. By the time the expensive touring cars pulled up in a whirl of dust, a crowd had gathered. Out stepped a small, middle-aged man. He smiled shyly at the Indians. If they had not been apprised earlier of who he was, they would never have guessed that here was the richest man in the world. John D. Rockefeller, Jr. gestured, and three adolescent boys joined him from the other cars. The eldest, tall and lean, seemed as shy as his father. 18-year-old John carried his grandfather's name into the third generation and already seemed bent under the burden. The smallest boy, 14-year-old Lawrence, held a promising glint of mischief in his eyes, but had a habit of looking toward an older brother standing next to him for what to do next. This middle brother, a husky 16-year-old, beaming with animal confidence, was clearly the leader. His eyes quickly took in the crowd, one eye strangely bluer than the other. But what really set him apart was the square-jawed grin that flashed a fearless geniality. His father introduced him as Nelson. Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller, named after the maternal grandfather who had been the most powerful man in the United States Senate, already commanded attention. Nelson's need for attention was precisely what made his father uncomfortable. It had been a source of strain for the father ever since the boy's early childhood, when Nelson's rebelliousness surfaced. This trip, far from their Manhattan home and the special relationship Nelson enjoyed with his mother, had been the father's attempt to gain a closer relationship with his elder boys, particularly this most troublesome second son. Yet the very fact that the Rockefeller males had arrived in different cars, the father riding with officials of a mining company, the boys following in tow, underscored how hard it was for the father to break with the corporate responsibility of being John D. Rockefeller's only son, even during a vacation. Try as he might, Rockefeller, Jr., seemed incapable of moving out of the shadow of his father, the founder of the family fortune. Even in the family office, he was referred to as Mr. Junior. As Junior himself once explained, there could be only one John D. Rockefeller. If Junior was hurt that Nelson looked up to his grandfather, not to him, as the family's role model, he had only himself to blame.